and welcome to my hearth. I started going to the local village school in 1960, which was a very different world from now. This was not a time of technology. The whole teaching was based around the blackboard and chalk, with the occasional maps and posters. When we were learning to do proper writing, we had inkwells and pens with nibs. When we did colouring, it was with crayons and the occasional pencil. However, there was a lot of learning and there was a lot of books. At the end of each day, the teacher read to us from a novel. And it was this serialisation that I looked forward to most in my day. I didn't realise it at the time because at that moment nobody thought it existed, but I was slightly dyslexic. Now don't get me wrong, I was a brilliant writer and reader and really enjoyed maths. However, when it came to spellings, I had to learn them rather than recognise them. Up to this day, when I'm doing writing, I have to rely on the spell checker on whatever program I'm using to make certain that I'm doing it right. And sometimes it's very frustrating if it's based on American spelling, because I can see it's wrong, but I don't always know why. We had regular tests, and sometimes these were spellings. And I think I drove my mum mad in always wanting to be as certain as possible. I remember vividly one day feeling terribly ill, but insisting that I went to school because there was a test that morning. But in fact, I had to come back at lunchtime and stay at home because I'd been violently sick during it. When I was little, I was relatively bright. This meant that I got through the work sometimes much quicker than other people. But I didn't mind that because it gave me a chance to get further on in whichever book I was reading. Nowadays the books would seem terribly old-fashioned, but for me they were a treasury, a miracle of literature. I especially loved The Water Babies by Charles Kingsley because of the names of the characters in it. Mrs. Do As You Would Be Done By, and Mrs. Be Done By As You Did. And the idea of the hero having to go and sweep chimneys was not such anathema to me, because we had real fires, and their accompanying chimneys had to be regularly cleaned and de-sooted. I love the fact that some of my favourite puppets on television were called Sooty and Sweep. And when it came out, the film of Mary Poppins, with its central theme of a chimney sweep, was absolute delight. We did maths in the old way, and that is, we recited the times tables every day, and all of our workings are done with mental arithmetic. This was a time of the old money, where there were 12 pennies to the shilling and 20 shillings to the pound. So we had to do really quite difficult mathematics. We still had halfpennies, but at that particular time we had already lost the farthing, much to the chagrin of older people. However, some of the puzzles in the older maths books that we had still used farthings, so we needed to know that there were 4 farthings to a penny, and that there were therefore 960 to the pound. 3 old copper pennies actually weighed an ounce, so when you had change in your pocket, it had a tendency to work a hole through the lining. It wasn't so much of a worry, because we very rarely had live money with us, as it were. As I said in a previous podcast, when I moved house, it meant that I had to stay for school dinner. But in fact, I have a feeling that my mum paid over the dinner money on a Monday for the week's lunches. The modern idea of a packed lunch didn't really come into being when I was at primary school. I do remember, however, that our parents had to make us a packed lunch if we went on an outing. One of the ones that I really enjoyed was when we met our local MP, Sir Bernard Brain, and he took us round the Houses of Parliament. I'm going to say I was about 10 when this happened, but it was a real delight. It must have been a day when Parliament wasn't sitting, because we actually went into the chamber of the House of Commons and saw all the seats and where the Speaker sat and all the accoutrements there, and the slightly more opulent nature of the House of Lords. But we were shown the woolsack where the Lord Chancellor sat. And when I was older and much more into Gilbert and Sullivan, I connected the visit to the House of Lords with the operetta. The other thing that really stayed with me at this trip was seeing the statue of the Burghers of Calais, which I thought was fantastic. And when we got back to school, I wanted to know all about them. Part of the delight of the day was us taking a riverboat down the river from the Houses of Parliament, past the Tower of London, to Greenwich, to see the Cutty Sark, the tea clipper ship that was moored there. I have no memory of us actually going on it, but we certainly saw it, and I've a funny feeling we got an ice cream. It was all very well organised, and our coach picked us up from the Cutty Sark to take us back to school. One of the delights of living so close to London was that there was the opportunity to literally go and see things. We went to the planetarium to see the sky, and at that time the silhouette of London that was underneath the projections was that of London during the war. Of course, whilst we were there, we also went round Madame Tussauds, though I think we didn't go into the Chamber of Horrors. At that time, in the early 60s, London was still being rebuilt. Especially as we drove through the east, there were quite a lot of sites that had been bombed and they had still not been rebuilt upon. I remember seeing an early Ealing Comedies film, which I think was called Hue and Cry, where the children in the film are actually playing on bomb sites, and it certainly struck a chord with me. Remember, I went to school only 15 years after the war had ended, and only 8 years after rationing had stopped. So although for the most part we were very optimistic, there was still a sense of getting on with it and pulling together. A lot of the stories and comics that came out of that time still had the Second World War as a major theme. And I've already said that for the most part, the older people in the village didn't mention the war. There was a real sense of not wanting to look back too much, but to look forward into the future. And this was certainly the case of our village. You didn't ask people questions about the war. And certainly, whenever we went abroad, we didn't talk about the war. In each year of the school, there was only one class. And that particular year group had one consistent teacher. In those days, it was first year, second year, third year, fourth year, fifth year, and so on. When I first arrived, I was taught by Mrs. Alderton, and I really liked her because she had a northern accent. In the third year, we got Mrs. Longthorne, who had a really bad reputation for being strict. But in fact, she was an excellent teacher and really patient. Later on, we got Mr. Thacker, who was relatively young, And then Mr. Rose was the teacher at the top of the school, and he was relatively old. Everything pointed us towards the 11 plus. There was no secondary school in our village. It was far too small. So whatever happened to us, we were going to have to go somewhere else. If we went to the grammar school, that was in the local town of Rayleigh. If we went to the secondary school, that was in the local town of Hockley. When I look back on it now, I have a funny feeling that we weren't ever really sort of coached about the 11 plus. We were just told it was going to happen and it would help people choose which school we went to. My father in particular was very concerned about me getting a good education. As I said, they knew that I was relatively bright, and so therefore expected that I would pass the 11 plus. However, I must say that there was no pressure. Because of how my parents were treated by their parents, in other words, my father had wanted to go into the Navy and had secretly gone in for the exam and passed it, and then was told by my grandma that he couldn't go. My mum had passed for the grammar school in Newcastle. However, she was told she had to go and look after her grandma in the Lake District, and so she didn't go. So because of that, they had decided that whatever we wanted to do, they would help us do it. It was my decision not to be a dancer. I loved school so much that I just had a feeling that if I did go to a dance school, I might not get as good an education. Again, remember, this is the middle of the 1960s. By the time I was going to go to secondary school, my sister had already finished her secondary modern school and was considering training to be a hairdresser. Again, remember that this is a time before computers and the web and all sorts of things, so trying to find out about schools was very reliant on our own teachers. My father had heard from a colleague at work that there was possibly a good school, which was called the Forest School at Snaresbrook, which was sort of on the outskirts of London. Keswick School in Cumberland was another possibility, but at that particular time I think they weren't taking in boarders. And my mum thought that being based at my grandma's house with the need to do lots of homework might have been too much for her. However, a very strange thing happened. Throughout my life, this has been one of the themes of it. Out of the blue, we actually got a phone call from a school I knew nothing about, which was Palmer School for Boys in Grays Thurrock. This was a direct grant school like Manchester Grammar, and it took in boarders, quite a lot of them being from English families that lived abroad and wanted to send their school-aged children back to this country to get an education. The headmaster rang my dad and said that they had been very impressed with my 11 plus paper and wanted to see me for an interview. More about all that in a later podcast.